This is The Immigration Conversation, presented by Fragomen, a series of talks and discussions by leading immigration lawyers and professionals from around the world. We'll bring you the most up-to-date business immigration news, issues of concern, and strategies in the world of global immigration and mobility.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Immigration Conversation. This is the second of a series of podcasts looking at Brexit. My name is George Karias, and I'm the managing partner of Fragomen's European offices. I'm joined today by my colleagues, true experts in all matters pertaining to UK and European immigration, respectively, Louise Haycock, my partner based in our London office, and Christine Sullivan, a director based in our Brussels office and head of our Netherlands practice. In today's podcast, we'll be discussing practical considerations for employers to consider as we approach the end of the Brexit transition period, and moreover, what steps can be taken now to mitigate the impact of the UK exiting the EU at the end of the year. If you haven't already done so, an opportunity for me to remind you all to visit Fragomen's dedicated Brexit microsite at fragomen.com. All of our podcasts are available there in the podcast library, as well as a significant amount of helpful material and guides, including previous relevant blogs and articles, all of which are designed to support you and your business through this critical period. I think it's fair to say that the world has changed considerably in the almost 4.5 years since the then government asked the British electorate whether the country should remain a member of or leave the European Union. The referendum, of course, famously resulted in 52% of the votes cast being in favour of leaving the EU. And although the referendum was legally non-binding, the UK government did move ahead and eventually the UK did leave the European Union on the 31st of January 2020. Now, since then, the UK has been in a transition period, and during this time, the benefits associated with freedom of movement, including the right to move and work in the UK and all EU countries, as well as unrestricted business travel, have remained in place. However, time is quickly running out. The 11-month transition period ends on the 31st of December 2020. And despite past assurances, as it stands, at the end of November 2020, the UK and EU have yet to reach a new trade deal. This obviously means that when the transition period ends at the end of 2020, the UK will automatically drop out of the EU's main trading arrangements and free movement will come to an end. The UK has also recently announced its new immigration system, and this will come into effect from the 1st of December 2020. Now, under the new regime, EU and non-EU citizens will be treated equally. Please do have a listen to Louise's podcast on the topic if you have an interest in UK immigration particularly and have not yet had the opportunity to do so. So, Christine, turning to you first, what impact is there if no trade deal is reached by the end of this year?
Yeah, thanks, George. This is a really interesting question because, we're an immigration provider and we would say, well, for a large part, the immigration impact, whether there's a deal or a no deal, remains pretty much the same. A lot of the things that we're going to talk about during this presentation. But there's one really critical aspect of moving people around the EU that is dependent on whether there's a deal and a no deal, and that is Social Security cost. For businesses that are moving people across Europe, they're aware that some countries have extremely high Social Security costs compared to others. And the UK is actually considered one of the low social security cost countries. The EU framework has basically meant that whether a person was being posted into or going assigned into one of the EU countries, those social security costs were pretty well contained by the EU framework. When that falls away and we don't have a deal in place, this could really impact employers. If there isn't a multinational deal, it goes down to what are the arrangements between individual countries and the UK. And this could mean that a person who's assigned into one of the countries could actually, their employer could be exposed to double social security costs. So, you know, a medium bad situation is social security costs increasing in one of the countries. But a really bad situation is having liability in the UK and in a second country. So this is something that is definitely impacted in the EU that we wouldn't necessarily say is about your immigration regime. It's not about work permits, not about business travel, but it's something that we're really warning employers about, because whether there's a deal or a no deal, it can really impact the budget for 2021 and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point, Christine. And it's not normally something that certainly for a lot of our clients that we've been speaking to forms part of the broader immigration discussion, but it's not necessarily something that's immediately on their radar as a result of Brexit. So it's a really significant point to keep in mind. And Louise, just turning to you, in terms of how to get ready, what needs to be done now?
Thanks, George. I think you raised a really good point at the beginning of the podcast when you said that we're looking to deal with two sides of the issue, both in the UK and in Europe, and perhaps looking to deal with them in the same way. And that's not always possible. But starting in the UK and the parallels to the EU position, what we're seeing a lot of and what we're encouraging businesses to do is to protect their current workforce. And I'm sure Christine would agree with me that she's seeing lots of businesses encouraging registrations to protect the position of people that are already in situ. So UK nationals in Europe and Europeans in the UK. Now, in the UK, we're seeing employers issuing reminders to their staff to get their applications in under the EU settlement scheme. That's been in place for over 18 months, so lots of those applications have already been made. Individuals have until the 30th of June 2021 to be able to submit those applications. But of course, with the end of the transition period coming up on the 31st of December, it's a really good time to sort of gain some momentum and issue those reminders now. But I think perhaps the most pressing issue in the UK right now, and this obviously differs to Europe, is that there is a brand new immigration system that will launch on the 1st of December. And this new immigration system is a direct reaction to Brexit. So no of the nationals of all of the EEA countries plus Switzerland, but of course not Ireland, would need immigration permission to come and work in the UK if they relocate from the 1st of January onwards. The Home Office have seized on the opportunity to look at immigration in the UK and to try and put in place a more fitting scheme for the volumes of applicants that they anticipate, but also to service labour need. And it's something that I explore on my podcast with Charlotte in lots of detail. But the headlines of that is that there's going to be a single system for Europeans and non-Europeans, with some relaxations, for example, around the skill and salary threshold. They're going to be reduced so that more roles are eligible for sponsorship, and the resident labour market test is removed. However, the system itself remains inherently quite complex, and it's certainly less straightforward and more expensive than free movement. Now, because of this expense in particular, we're seeing lots of headcount planning. So that's a really good way to get prepared. So you moving Europeans to the UK before the 1st of January, and I'd expect that Christine is seeing something quite similar. And in terms of planning for that new regime, and it's important that businesses do, right now I'm seeing lots of training sessions going on. So, for example, training recruiters on what it might look like, training line managers, reporting to business leaders on the workforce impact of the regime, and ensuring that projects are planned to and allow for scope to give time and also the resources that are required to get those visas. If they're necessary.
Thanks, Louise. And Christine, it's a little more complex in Europe, is it not? Just by virtue of the fact that you've got 26 or so different countries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those fundamental principles that Louise hit on, and as she said, absolutely, we're seeing the same thing. We're encouraging the same things for employers, but it's so complex on the EU side. There's all different countries, they're all interpreting these different rules in different ways. Now, the good thing is we had that earlier deal at the beginning of the year, and there is a fundamental agreement between all EU countries and the UK that, you know, the rights that EU nationals are getting in the UK are also protected in the same way here on the continent. But each protection comes with a different process to obtain that protection. And what we see is super wide variance across all of the countries. And, you know, how do you go about doing that? You know, how is that UK national going through the process of actually registering their presence in one of the countries? How do you then go and obtain what we call an Article 50 permit, which is sort of the settled status permit? That's the permit that all the countries will issue. So it's difficult. It's difficult for UK nationals to know. In a lot of countries, there isn't a process that has been published. It's difficult for companies. Companies who hear that Hungary will issue permits up until 2023, whereas other countries are using that same June 2021 deadline. That's a huge wide variance and a lot to deal with. Glad that Louise called out Ireland, because I think it's important that we say, you know, as we're talking about the EU, fortunately, Ireland and the UK do have a special relationship that pulls Ireland out of a lot of this complexity. So that brings us down at least one less country to have to pay attention to. So yeah, the principles of making sure that if you can get somebody into the country or onto our continent before the end of the transition period, you're going to have an easier time. But then meeting deadlines, staying aware of what the processes are, making sure that you have awareness of who is where and which process, that you're keeping an eye on the fact that eventually there's going to be a right to work check 2, 3, 4 years down the line. You don't want to have some UK passport on file that is no longer a valid right to work document. How are you going to deal with that? And then also remembering that Social Security plays a part in this. So just like you want to recruit somebody over and maybe get them registered before the end of the transition period, also securing their Social Security certificate before the end of the period as just a precaution against trouble in 2021.
Yeah, and you raised some really good points there, Christine. Thanks for that. And I think you're right. I mean, I think especially with the situation we have now, which has been obviously aggravated by the COVID pandemic, we started to see, even before the pandemic, we started to see kind of a trend of protectionism sweeping across Europe. We do expect that to continue as borders open, especially given the economic damage that has been done by the lockdowns. So I think that day one compliance is definitely something which is going to rise in prominence, and employers really need to be all over and consider and have a strategy for going forward. You know, we're getting lots of questions about, the picture is patchy. It varies considerably, as you've mentioned there, Christine. What about moves after the 1st of January? What is that going to look like? So Louise, there's a new regime in place that we know about. What will that look like for European nationals and others looking to move to the UK in the new year?
Thanks, George. So obviously, all European nationals who come to the UK to work are going to need immigration permission under this regime, unless, of course, they're Irish, and we're all desperately seeing whether or not we could qualify for Irish citizenship to be in that beneficial position. But that aside, we need to make sure that if you are looking to sponsor a European into the UK, that you hold a sponsor license to enable you to sponsor an individual. And after that, the process looks quite similar to how it does under Tier 2, which is the current immigration regime that's in place. So an employer would issue a certificate of sponsorship for an individual. That individual would then go off and obtain entry clearance to enable them to come into the UK. So really, in terms of what you're sort of looking to do, you're checking to see whether an individual is eligible for that sponsorship, and ensure that you're feeding back to the business around the costs and the timing projections for those individuals. But you picked up then around right to work, and I think it's probably useful to mention the position in the UK as well, because it's particularly complex between the 1st of January to the end of June. Now, in that period, an employer is able to gain a statutory defence against illegal working if they cite an individual's European passport or ID card. So that's all well and good, apart from the fact that if that individual actually had arrived in the UK from the 1st of January onwards, then actually they don't have the right to work in the UK. They would have need to have got themselves a status under the new immigration regime. And that creates a risk area for employers, because actually you could have done a perfectly satisfactory right to work check, but actually that individual doesn't have the right to work. Now, it's not expected that there would be retrospective checks on those individuals. But there is a question about when that scenario comes to light, and it could be that individual can't access healthcare or can't open a bank account or can't rent a property. And at that point, and once you know that individual doesn't have the right to work, it then creates a problem for the employer that ultimately you would need to sort out. The difficulty is that you have to be very careful about what documentation you're asking for an individual up front. So if you were to make it mandatory that a European national who you employed in the first half of 2021 to produce something more than a European passport or ID card, that's potentially discriminatory. What we're suggesting is that you work very closely with your employment counsel and also with your data privacy officer in order that you have a very gentle conversation with somebody that says, look, we want to help you. We want to ensure that you've got the immigration status that you are entitled to. Could you share with me whether or not you have status under the EU settlement scheme, or whether or not we need to explore this new immigration regime for you and get you a status under that? So really, that is sort of a kind of problem area for employers that certainly I'm talking to a lot of companies about now.
Yeah, very valid points. And it's you almost expect that there will be a period for during a transition where there may be some sort of overlap, but it obviously places an additional level of burden onto employers, and something else they need to be seriously mindful of. Christine, just turning from the EU perspective, what are moves after the 1st of January looking like there?
Well, the good news from the EU is we do not have a new immigration scheme that anyone needs to understand. The bad news is we have 25 existing immigration schemes that companies will need to navigate. So what happens is UK nationals fall into the existing schemes for all non-EU nationals. Now, fortunately, that doesn't involve an entry visa. So UK nationals don't need an entry visa. So I would say the best correlation would be an Australian coming to the EU to work, US national, Canadian national. So not somebody who needs a visa to actually land and arrive, but will likely require a work permit for work activities, and staying longer than 90 days going to require a residence permit. And the rules for those work permits and residence permits are going to vary across all of the countries. Same thing with business travel. Business travel is going to be without a visa, but again, whether that travel is going to require a work permit or not is going to come down to 25 existing schemes. So I think you're noticing a bit of a trend as we go between Louise and I, which is there's change, and the change in the direction in the UK we can be very specific about. You know, if this is the regime, this is what the changes are going to be. And in the EU, it's more about, okay, the change is going to be complexity. It's going to be amongst all of the different countries different. And in the course of a podcast or a webinar, you can't really say this is how a UK national who's taking up work after January is going to be impacted, because it really depends on which one of the countries that they're going to. And it's really important that I also call out cross-border working and business travel here, because, we've been speaking about the fact that UK nationals who are in the EU before 31st of December this year are going to have Brexit rights. But it's also important to say those rights are limited to the country in which they are residing or working. So important to call out that business travel rules about work in other EU countries, that is the same for all UK nationals, regardless of whether they're located in the UK or actually located in one of the the EU countries with rights. So lots of complexity, lots of things to take care of, lots of things to attend to. And once again, it's about the things that go with moving across borders. So it's not just your immigration, it's social security, it's also postal workers, understanding how that changes.
Yeah, thanks, Christine. And obviously, that's a significant change for UK nationals in particular. Just something to come back to, about 90 days in any 180-day period. Lots of Brits obviously holiday within Europe. Does time spent in Europe constitute or count towards that 180-day limit? Is that something people need to start being mindful of?
Yeah, definitely. Currently, a UK national can go for 90 days into any one of the EU countries. Now it's going to be 90 days in all of the EU countries in the Schengen area. And that means, you know, George, if you go and you have a family visit into one of the countries, let's say you're visiting family members in Cyprus, or if I go over to the Netherlands, all of a sudden these holiday times, they start to accrue to your entire allowance. So a frequent business traveler who's on the continent for many, many days may also have to keep in account, personal time, weekends, the holiday travel, your summer vacation. Is that going to put you over the top and impact your business travel into the continent?
Yeah, thanks, Christine. Definitely a significant change for lots of British nationals, and something to keep in mind. I know that some of these, I know, Christine, and it goes beyond the scope of what we're discussing today, but I know there are obviously a lot of workforce planning, a lot of solutions that can be brought together through workforce planning, through the use of EU ICT visas, and a bit of strategic thinking. And what I'd say to those of you listening, if you haven't had the opportunity to do so, again, please just go back to the fragment.com website. There are recordings there which delve into more detail. For those frequent travelers, and especially those individuals who are traveling to multiple countries during a trip. So perhaps, you know, we've identified some of the risk areas, we've identified some things to be mindful of. So I guess just to cap it all off, Louise, risk areas to consider, to be on the radar from the 1st of January, what would they look like from a UK perspective?
Yeah, thanks, George. I think it's sort of important that I pick up on the point that Christine so validly made about business travel. Perhaps the position isn't quite as stark in the UK, but it's still a kind of similar position that Europeans coming to the UK from the 1st of January who don't hold work permission or frontier worker permission can't work, and they've got to restrict their activities to those permitted as a business visitor. So, for example, meetings or classroom-based training at its most basic. I mean, the UK is not part of the Schengen area, so there are less stringent rules on time spent in the UK anyway, and there aren't any posted worker notifications for assignees. But I think the real challenge for business is to identify those business travellers and to be able to track them and to provide assessments before they travel. And in that sense, and the business traveller population could be taken as one whole. I think in terms of risk areas specific to the UK, the biggest one that I can see is that there's no category under the new immigration regime for low-skilled or for low-paid work. So lots of UK-based businesses won't have the same access to labour that they've enjoyed previously. And that's something that we see is planning for in the past 4 years. But I still think that it's probably an area of risk that we can see forming.
Yeah, well, I'm right in thinking that the benchmark, if you like, for a skilled worker has been decreased slightly.
Yeah, well, it's been reduced to RQF level 3, which basically means kind of A-level Scottish higher, so a school leaver type role. And although there will be some sector-based schemes, it certainly isn't going to cover absolutely everybody, and it could present challenges to businesses.
Got it. And Christine, from your perspective, what would you say are the key risk areas? I know we've touched on a few already, but what are the take-homes?
Yeah, this really goes to the question of what Brexit means for a UK national, and it goes to the change from freedom of movement to being a non-EU citizen. We have immigration schemes, we have work permit rules, we have residence permit rules. It's going to add to the process times and the cost for a company, but these things are possible. It's the gaps. The gaps are things like working across border, having a regional role that involves short work in multiple countries, the business travel, all of those things that are so easily done with a passport, done without forethought, done without cost, done without a lot of planning at a day's notice. Those things become problematic. We know that, right? Because we have those gaps when we are trying to get Americans, Canadians, Australians in to do these activities. Those gaps are going to become big risk areas. It's about internal education to business travelers so that they understand that there are contact people who need to be told in advance for the business travel. It's about being prepared for possibly work permits. And it's about paying attention to anybody who has a regional role and who's maybe living in the UK and frequently in one of the countries going into Paris, for example, or somebody who lives at the border in Germany and goes right across the border to a factory or an office location in the Netherlands. Those are very high risk. It's something that's frequently done by UK nationals because EU nationals can do it. And it's something there are maybe not ready solutions for and require planning. And then also budgeting for social security costs. So at least being ready for the fact that there could be an impact on the 2021 and beyond budget, but also maybe thinking ahead and seeing, is there a possibility to reduce that via workforce planning? Those would be the things that I would definitely flag in the EU.
Yeah, thanks, Christina. You can understand why our Dublin office has really seen a spike of interest in applications, as Louise mentioned earlier, about Irish nationality and citizenship. Just that this will be a very different world for British nationals in Europe afterwards and also for European nationals looking to work in the UK. So that's it for now. Obviously, the conversation doesn't stop there. Trade negotiation discussions are ongoing. We hope there will be some sort of deal by the end of 2020. Please do stay tuned for future podcasts and updates. And obviously, don't hesitate to get in touch with either Christine, Louise, myself, or your Fragment contacts if you do have any questions. In the meantime, thank you very much for joining us. Stay safe, stay well, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
The Immigration Conversation podcast is presented by Fragment, the leading firm dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide. This episode is current as of the date of recording. With frequent changes in global immigration, be sure to keep up to date by visiting our website at www.fragaman.com and subscribing to the Immigration Conversation on your favorite podcast service to hear the latest episode. This podcast is for informational purposes only. This podcast does not constitute legal advice or give rise to an attorney-client relationship between any listener and our firm. If you have any questions, please contact the global immigration professional with whom you work at Fragaman.